Good morning, good afternoon, good lunch break, everyone. In today's episode, we'll talk about the implications of implementing artificial intelligence at 211. What is 211? Well, 211 is an information and referral service that refers citizens towards community organizations, public and parapublic services, and programs nearer them. We're having this conversation with both Judy Shum, National Director of 211 and Community Partnership at United Way, and Dave Montague, 211's Director of Information Resources and Technology. Now, take a delightful sip of your favorite beverage, because the Feel Out Podcast starts now.
My name is Judy Shum, and my role at United Way Centre Canada is the National Director for 211 and Community Partnerships. So I would say maybe the second part of my title explains the first part of my title, because it's really about, 211 is about partnerships, about bringing people together to deliver good services to communities.
And I'm Dave Montague. I'm a director of IT and digital solutions for one of the agencies that provide the 211 service in Toronto. And my job would be to help partners, users access the 211 service, either through data or the phone. So I'm sort of, I support the technical background or platforms that supports it all.
Well, thank you very much for this amazing definition. Could you define what is 211 and how did COVID became such a game changer in its importance and growth?
211 is essentially a three-digit dial code. More than 20 years ago, United Way Canada and a number of other partners went to the CRTC to ask for that dial code to be used for community services. So people have a very simple number to remember. They can just call and ask for information if they need childcare, they need food bank or, you know, employment programs and so on. So over the last two decades, we have built this across Canada as a community-based service. It is what we call information referral, but you don't need to know exactly what you're looking for. You can call 211 and say, I just lost my job and I have no food in my fridge. What do I do now? And trained navigators at the other end of the line will be there to listen with empathy and help you prioritize those needs and then direct you to the resources that exist in the community. Unfortunately, sometimes there are no resources available and the navigators will be there to try and problem solve and see what might be the next best course of action for the caller to be able to take. That's essentially what it is. It's a navigation service.
Let's go into defining AI with 211. So let's talk about technology. How are we using AI right now at 211?
I mean, it always comes down to how you define AI. There'd be lots of people that would tell you that we haven't really got there yet in any sector. But certainly the most exciting parts of the, I guess, that AI sector would be things around natural language processing, the ability to automate certain aspects of the finding of resources. Like 211 is all about accessing resources. And I think what we've been looking at, and I'm sure we'll get into more detail, is trying to make the experience, if you're not going to call on the phone, and that, I mean, we can talk about AI on and relating to phone calls as well, but I spent a lot of my time thinking about how to ease the access for people to find services. And AI will help that with natural language processing, automation of, you know, recommended referrals. There's all sorts of areas that we can look into where, based on prior experience, we can build out predictive models that will really complement and help support people on the phone, but also potentially make it completely autonomous from that. People can just go to the web, you know, this is my problem or this is my sort of a needs assessment. And based on prior experience, we can use predictive modeling to suggest the way forward.
Would it be possible for you to define what natural language processing is? And maybe, you know, because I feel it's going to be, it's kind of like AI, you know, there's the broad answer to it, but also the application into 211, depending whatever angle you want to take, because maybe there's several angles you can take from 211. But let's simplify things and...
Well, and yeah, maybe I was trying to sound too smart right off the bat. But the fact is, I mean, really, when it comes down to it, AI and 211 is still new. Like, we're not, We're a series of nonprofit organizations across Canada, so it's not like we have massive R&D departments pushing out AI products. But the thing that, like I said, that we were trying to do is find ways to make searching even. People expect every website to behave like Google and to be as sort of have as great a search as Google. And so when I say things like natural language processing, I use this scenario all the time. If I type in, my mom's memory is failing, if I put that into one of our 2-on-1 websites, I'm not going to get a very good result, because usually keyword searches are very structured. They're looking for the exact matches of those keywords. So if it doesn't say mom in one of those records, you're not going to get anything back. Whereas natural language searching takes the intent, they call it the semantics, right? What did I mean? Well, when I say mom, I also mean parent, elder, senior. And so what it does is it tries to get the intent of what you're saying. And God help me, it's all math in the background. What it does is it takes the intent of what I said, and it's already looked at all the 2-on-1 data and gathered and recorded the intent of each of those records. So a record in 2-on-1 is like an agency information, name, you know, agency description, eligibility, that type of information. And so it's already looked at that record and figured out the intent of the Alzheimer's Society of Toronto is about helping people with failing memory. And then it looks at my keyword search of my mom's memory is failing, does a bunch of math, and if the two numbers match, or if they're close, it's one of the top results. And it's amazing to me how it's done. But you do it every day when you use Google. It's been doing natural language processing forever. But it's only been in the last couple of years that a lot of those tools and the processing power have been made available to, you know, mere mortals. And so what we're trying to do is incorporate that into 2-on-1, because web searching is only going to get more important, and we want to be able to have a search that is as easy to use as what people have come to expect on any website they go to.
I was wondering how, you know, I feel that there's two branches to my questions right now, which is, you know, we're talking about so much data, and in terms of, you know, this question is also maybe directed to you, Judy, but in terms of data and the amount of calls, the amount of searches, the amount of you know, colleagues, not colleagues, but services that you provide or redirect to, what is the worth, you know, what is the value of your database in terms of everything that you've got in all those provinces? You know, it grows exponentially, I feel, yeah, as the service grows.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we often as a network talk about the 2-on-1 database, if you pull all the provinces and territories together as one big national data set, we like to refer to it as a single source of truth. And the reason for that, on the resources side, we operate based on a set of standards. This is called the Alliance of Information and Referral Systems, ARIS, A-I-R-S. And if anyone is interested to look into it, in fact, those standards tell, you know, the operators or the service providers how to set up the records in a database, how to keep them up to date. We must keep every record up to date at least once a year. And by updating it, doesn't mean we just go to a website and say, hey, let's see if they have changed their program hours. We actually have to verify that with a real person so that the information is as accurate as possible. And then the people who answer the calls, or whether it's text or chat or the phone line, they are also certified as well as community resource specialists. I mean, we call them different things across the country, but essentially the standards governing the operation of 2-on-1 are there, and the service providers themselves are also accredited on a regular basis as well. So the reason why I'm bringing this up is to answer your question about the value. Is that there? I think, especially when it comes to AI, we have been approached by, say, tech companies who want to develop apps, and they think, hey, let's use the 2-on-1 data and create apps that will help people access services and so on. And we often say that will be a great collaboration to look into, but we also want to make sure that there is the, let's say if it's related to mental health, we want to ensure that the intent of that technology is to actually help people facing mental health issues, right? And that is not actually going to do more harm to the person just because we think, oh, you know, AI can get them what they need. So maybe I'm kind of moving away from what you're asking, but I think the point I'm trying to make here is that, yes, the database that we have gathered is really comprehensive and valuable, but it's not just enabled by technology, it's also enabled by real relationships that we build on the ground. Because just imagine if you're operating a frontline service like a shelter, perhaps, you know, the last thing on your mind is, oh, I better go and update my information on a database because you're busy serving the community. So in order for us to do the work properly, to update the database, we have to rely on community organizations that truly believe in the work of 211, and they see the importance, how we in fact help them to do that initial triaging and screening so that people are not just showing up at the doors for services, because as it is, they are probably meeting higher demand that they have capacity for.
On the scale of 211, which is a national scale, is it hard to implement AI on such a big scale compared to, let's say, just a small, you know, non-for-profit that would try to use AI, but now we're talking about several provinces, seven laws, several, you know, layers that comes into play when it comes to this technological, you know, not obstacle, but project.
I think the key for us there is to, you know, that's where, and it's often not where I'm the best at, it's where people like Judy are, but this idea of setting policies and sort of guidelines about the type of data we're willing to share and to put into these systems. Like, we have a huge data set. Like I said, those needs records, it can be very precise, right down to the postal code of where people are asking for services. So you can imagine pushing, you know, 3 million of those across the country into a data set, having them analyzed. It could be, I would imagine there's going to be great things that we find out of that. But if that potentially could be used for different ways, like we have trouble sometimes even sharing with certain groups because we're not sure how they're going to use the output, right? And it's not that, you know, we do try to look for symbiotic relationships, strategic alliances. So it's not just about data for the data's sake, about getting them out there. So the seven laws and all of that stuff, like, I guess what I was trying to say is that if we can get it down to a set of data with the, you know, no personal information, all of that kind of stuff, I don't think laws will be the issue, privacy laws or anything like that. It's more about making sure our data is done as used as equitably as can be. And a lot of that is incumbent upon us to create an infrastructure where you kind of have to fit a certain, not a certain mold, but agree to certain principles to be part of the conversation with us.
What is the gap between technology optimization and true community needs?
The one thing, even when I was doing that sort of testing around the chatbot, it's the biggest thing the navigators bring, well, one of the many things, is the idea of probing and of sort of being able to tease out unidentified needs or non-identified needs. Because somebody's calling for a food bank, and if I put that into Google or somewhere, it gives me a bunch of food banks. But it doesn't ask me how I got to this point, and if there's, or, you know, do I have children that also need something different? The technology will, conceivably for a while, will be very transactional.
I think the question about gap is interesting, Joey, because in my mind, I would ask, is it just that the gap will always be there? Because we are not looking at AI to replace humans, right? And particularly in the work of nonprofits, when it's really community-based, you started the conversation asking about the impact during COVID of 211, and I probably didn't quite answer that. But think about back in the times in early 2020 when lockdowns happened and a lot of people all of a sudden, you know, were stuck at home. They have no way of thinking, okay, well, how do I get access to food? And their lives were just, you know, I mean, for all of us, we're quite disrupted. And we saw a lot of calls to 211 at that time, which is really about food access. Because community programs closed down and the solutions to get around that took a little bit of time to develop, right? So the point I'm trying to make is that maybe the gap will always exist because it's a matter of, you know, one exists to complement the other. And it's not about replacing and it's not about them doing the same thing, right? Technology and humans. But essentially, how do we kind of go take these two components in a parallel way so that the outcome is going to be better for whatever the intent was for that coming together of the human component and technology. Quick example, during COVID, there were many, many calls from seniors when vaccinations were first rolled out. And many seniors called 211 and say, I have no laptop, I have no computer, I have no access to, you know, online, and I don't know how to register to get my vaccination. What do I do? I got so many of these examples from one particular partner. It was in BC, and they ended up actually starting a program where people can call 211 to offer as volunteers to check up on the seniors and to also doing some chores for them as well. So again, you know, is the technology through a phone line, you know, some kind of registration system that kind of bring these people together. But at the end of the day, it's still about connecting humans for you know, to make their lives better.
Just to make sure that I'm reading this in the right direction, is to make sure that, you know, the human stays on top in terms of priority and not let technology sort of just lead the way without any restrictions or anything. I feel from both of your interventions, there's this element that human will always be the end goal and not seeking the optimization of everything. Okay. Am I?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's always bad, you know, when you say human over and over again in a conversation, for the idea is to put, you know, we say client or people first, right? That's part of even my agency's like mission, right? We're a people first organization, and that's for the end user and for staff. The idea is that we know what navigators can bring to a conversation. They have the skills and they have the education to do these things. And it's all about nuance. And it's all about probing deeper into a conversation. So that's why I think, yeah, for sure. But there's lots of ways that we already use technology to make that a better situation for all involved. You know, ages ago, we had a blue book. It wasn't the yellow pages, but it was the blue pages of community services. And so now, of course, that's all online. And it's all searchable in 100 different ways. But the AI, some of those things that we've talked about, you know, these are going to be training tools, onboarding tools. So, it's, you know, you can build these interactive platforms for new hires to come in and be scenario-based learning. That's all based on real-world scenarios, right? So it's going to support the infrastructure that we have here. Because, yeah, just as Judy was saying, things like the pandemic, the hurricane and the Atlantic provinces, everything that's wildfires, there are so many times when things are just happening in the moment that people need a different kind of service, something that can't sort of fit into a checkbox, where I think there's going to be that need for the human, the people first type of focus.
And, you know, going in the same direction, how is it possible to find the complementary in AI's analysis and humans' interpretation? Because just like you said, Judy, there's always a human sort of fact-checking elements from your data and everything. But within that architecture, is there also possibility for inequities that might arise here and there?
Yeah, I would say for sure. Even we put a lot of work recently, and for a long time now, but certainly recently, around trying to make our data set, the agencies, more diverse, right? We have people tend to think, well, maybe not on this podcast, but the idea that data is neutral, that all the agencies that are in our directory, they deserve to be there. And we might be missing some, but it's not because of bias. But the fact is, you know, it's humans putting that stuff into the system. And AI, if it trains itself on those same data sets, then it'll just keep perpetuating and say, these are the types of resources that you should be showing. The fact is, you know, it'd be easy enough to refer to the same 100 agencies over and over again, just because of, you know, based on past interactions. So there are lots of ways that AI would say, it's the same as everything, as you kind of know, like bad data in means bad data out. And if we don't take a look at our data sets before we start really training AI on them, then we're just going to perpetuate that whole thing. So I think there is a chance for inequity to grow. And so what we have been doing, and where I started, was making conscious efforts to reach out to community groups that were underserved and say, listen, this is what we have in our directory right now. Yeah, on your day-to-day, you're the experts in this field, or in the, you know, you're the community leaders here. What are we missing? And so we have to build those up before we could ever say, now we're going to let the machines tell us what to do next. Like, we'd never get to that point. But, you know, when you put AI on something, like I said before, you know, you want to kind of believe what comes out of it, but it's, you can't. You have to verify. You have to trust it and then verify. But if the data is not as perfect as it could be going in, it's just going to get worse because it'll just keep looping through itself.
How can philanthropy play a role, you know, in your vision in this, you know, in this direction that either 2-1-1 is going with or just in general?
2-1-1 partners are subject to, you know, funding by governments in many cases and also by United Ways and other funders as well. So what we're seeing, I think, over the last while, are calls for proposals specifically related to innovation and technology. And it's a great thing because nonprofits generally don't have a lot of resources to put into, you know, developing technology and innovation. Now, mind you, I think nonprofits are very innovative when it comes to solving community problems. And, you know, it's just a matter of not having enough resources often to make use of technology to solve those problems. It is important for within kind of the grant making sector, we are starting to talk about what we call community driven philanthropy, which means in order to address inequities, we can keep coming from, say, just a donor perspective, or we can just say, here's what we think is important. We really need to hear from our communities very hyper-locally as to what are the issues and how do they see the right solutions for those issues. And whether or not technology or AI may play a part in that, I don't think we should just put out a call for proposal and say, okay, we want you guys to innovate. We want you guys to use technology without keeping in mind that, tell us why that is needed in the community and how does it solve the issues in the community. And maybe it's a part of it. The other part maybe is to really invest in the people doing the work and ensure that there are enough youth workers, there are enough, you know, shelter workers and housing workers and so on. So philanthropy at the core is about people helping people. And technology and AI and so on, they are the enablers, but they are not the ends, right? And often they will highlight the issues in order for philanthropic organizations, grant-making organizations to realize that in addition to putting investments into particular issues and solutions and so on, we still need to look for system change. We need to kind of go after our policymakers and ask for changes as well, so that the inequities can be addressed.
Higher or lower than 50, the closest gets the point. I will illustrate three statements related to a specific number. Then both of you will have to say if it's either higher or lower than 50. After your call, you'll need to specify what you think the number is. The closest to the actual number gets the point, and then vice versa, we continue until all the numbers are stated. Now, important, for the sake of the game, let's round up the numbers and keep in mind that some can be higher than 100 or lower than 0 if it's not a percentage. Number 1. In provinces where customer satisfaction surveys were conducted, what is the percentage of callers who received the referral they needed? Higher or lower than 50? Judy, you start.
Higher.
And what is the actual percentage?
80.
Dave?
I'm going to say higher. And I'm going to say 84.
The answer is 88.5. So I'll round it up to 89. Dave, you have 1 point.
I was going to say 88 too.
Dave, you do those snapshots. I'm trying to read.
Don't worry. Next time, Dave's going to be first. So how many languages 2-1-1 can be accessed with by phone, chat, text, or web? Higher or lower than 50? Dave?
Higher.
What is the actual number?
And it depends which website you're looking at. I'm going to say 150.
Judy?
It's higher for sure. And I know 150 is usually what we put out, but I know there are instances where you say 170.
So which number are you going with?
170.
The answer from the website I got the information on is 150. So Dave, right now it's 2-0. Is it going to be a 3-0 or?
Oh, come
Judy,
on, Joey.
Judy, you can do this. You can do this. I trust you. Okay. Now, since usually it's easier for the second person Dave, you're going to be first on that one. Okay. Last but not least, 2 years ago, as part of its COVID-19 response, overall calls and website visits to existing 211 services increased by what percentage on average in the March to August timeframe? Okay. Now it's, keep in mind, from March to August timeframe and existing 211 services. Dave, higher or lower than 50?
I'm going to say lower.
You said lower. What is your percentage?
30.
30%. Judy, higher or lower than 50?
I should really know where you found that information. Lower, but I would say 37.
The answer is 38%.
Oh, you pulled it out.
So nice. Judy going with a bang at the end. Mm-hmm. So it's important for me to precise that it's actually 31% for calls and 45% for the website. So that's why it was the average for both of them. Thank you for playing. Now, Dave, you can say that, yes, you did win. But Judy, she got out with like so close to like bang. That's our show. To continue the conversation around artificial intelligence and philanthropy, join us on our different platforms for more content and share your comments. We'd like to thank Judy Shum and Dave Montague for this unique conversation and PhilApp for hosting this educational podcast. I would also like to thank the amazing production team without whom this podcast wouldn't be possible. We have Catherine McDonald as head of production and Leonie Poulin as co-producer, researcher, and editor. A big thanks to all our listeners. See you next time.